Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Soulfulpreneur Talk Radio with your hosts, Rachel Archelaus and Megan Grandemeyer. Merging spirituality and business on the Enlightenment Evolution Network.
Hi everyone, it's Megan Grandemeyer here with Soulfulpreneur Talk Radio. I'm joined today with my co-host, Rachel Archelaus.
Hello.
Hello, Rachel. And it is January 20th, 2015, and we are so happy you are joining us today. If you would like to call in and ask a question or get a quick reading or participate in our talk all about food today, you can call 347-308-8788. And if you have a free account on blogtalkradio.com, we have the chat open, so you can always say hello on there, or you can post a question. So we always welcome all your questions about your spiritual journey, your business, your life purpose, just anything you'd like to ask. And you can find more about us on soulfulpreneur.com, and full has two L's, so S-O-U-L-F-U-L-L. P-R-E-N-E-U-R.com. And we're also on Facebook if you search soulfulpreneur.com. And we're happy to say that you can find all of our shows as podcasts on iTunes. And you can also find us on YouTube in addition to Blog Talk Radio and our website. So we are all connected. And Stitcher, right, Rachel?
Yep, Stitcher too.
Stitcher as well. So, and we're part of the Enlightenment Evolution Network. It's a network for all things metaphysical, and we have a great team of hosts that have shows on throughout the week, so there's lots of other radio programs as well. And you can find more about them if you go to facebook.com/Enlightenment Evolution Network. And at the end of our show today, we'll have some info on the other shows that are on the rest of the week, so you can learn more about that. And any opinions expressed on Soulfulpreneur Radio by us or our guests or callers does not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Enlightenment Evolution Network. So we got all our little homework there out of the way. So Rachel, today we're going to talk all about food and how food affects us vibrationally, how it affects our mood, our appearance, our motivation. And just, you know, we'll discuss both of our journeys with food and changes in diet. And then if anyone calls in and wants to participate, that'd be great as well.
Yeah, we really welcome your input here, because food is a really big topic for sensitive people usually. You know, if you are empathic, if you're psychically open, even if you just find that you're introverted, or extroverted in Megan's case, but a lot of people who are on this path and who'd be listening to this show have had food issues before, and we'd really love to hear from you to see, you know, what are you doing differently than most people? How did you know you were sensitive? What issues have you gone through? So, yeah, add to our conversation. We'd love it.
Absolutely. And you can also add to it on Facebook as well. We have some posts about this topic, and if you're maybe listening to the archive, you can always post something on Facebook and we will answer you. So Rachel, do you want to talk a little bit about your food journey? Because you went through a lot in your life. It's interesting how you lived a good portion of your life not feeling well, yet that was normal to you, which is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I know. So I have an interesting story where growing up, you know, I was super happy. I was always, you know, I wasn't really sick ever. Things seemed pretty normal, except that I had all these symptoms that I wasn't connecting to anything. Like my abdomen would get so puffed out, as I called it, and I couldn't figure out what the reason was. And it's not something I ever really harped on just because it was so normal for me ever since I was little. And it was so noticeable that when I was younger, when I was like 6 years old, I kept saying that I was pregnant to myself, and I was worried. I thought that I'd really done something, right, to get myself pregnant. And it didn't make sense to me, obviously, because I wasn't really even sure what sex was at that age. But and I never wanted to wear girls' jeans because, if you know, in girls' jeans back then, they came up to your waist. And when that would happen to my stomach, it would really hurt. You know, it would really cut into my belly. And so I always wore boys' jeans. And it could have even shaped my personality, right? Like, I never wanted to be girly. I didn't want to wear dresses because it was physically uncomfortable. And I was quite a tomboy. So who knows if that's all related. But I went through my life like that. I had no idea that anything was really wrong. I just adjusted my lifestyle to fit what was happening. And when I was about 18, I had a job as a nanny. And I had trouble walking up a little bit of a hill when I was bringing the kids to school. I mean, the hill was tiny. It wasn't anything like a hike, you know, that you would take just for fun. It was literally this tiny little hill, and I couldn't walk up it. I was so exhausted. I was sleeping fine. You know, that wasn't the issue. And I realized at that point, like, oh, I had a brownie for breakfast today. I wonder if that has anything to do with it. And that was the first time I ever put together that it could possibly be food, which is silly, I know, but it's how it goes for a lot of people. And so that little connection led to me doing some research. I read a lot of books. I really wanted to get to the absolute truth of the connection between food and the body, not any of this diet crap, not any of that, like, you know, I don't need to lose weight. That's not the issue. I want to know how food affects us as animals. And I read this book. The first really transformational book I read was called Fit for Life. And it was by, I believe his first name is Harvey, but his last name is definitely Diamond. And it was so amazing. It explained how our circadian rhythms play out in the food we eat and when we eat. It explained about food combining and how our digestive acids really do a better job, a more efficient job, if they're only digesting one kind of food at a time, like a meat or a grain. It explained about the water content in vegetables and fruits and how that helps us. It just on and on. I mean, there's so much information in there that I just hadn't thought about. You know, I was, as a teenager, drinking tons of soda, eating chips. It just, you know, my favorite food was like a chicken parmesan grinder. I ate a lot. And just that little book and learning about that simple kind of like, oh, it's chemistry. Okay, I get it now. That was so huge. And that really just started my journey. And I ended up going into raw foods because of it just seemed to make sense. Like, okay, if you put something that's alive into your body, you're kind of adding life to your body. If you put stuff that's dead into your body, you are depleting your body. And we are about, you know, 70 or so percent water as a species. And if you're adding foods that are also 70% water, or, you know, to 90% water for some fruits, then you're going to really be lessening the burden that your body has during digestion. Digestion takes more energy than any other bodily process. And so when we're spending most of our energy digesting our food, we're really taking it away from areas like being able to run around and brain power and creating muscle and fixing things and doing all that. So the whole premise really seemed to make sense to me, and I went on that. And that diet really gave me the opportunity to heal. And I'm not completely raw anymore, but those few years that I was really able to regain my health and actually feel good. You know, I was regular wasn't constipated like I'd been all my life, and I finally understood what it meant to actually feel good in your body. And that was a really long story, I know, but it taught me so much just looking at that and being aware of how what we eat, you know, affects our vibration, our energy level, our awareness, and everything else about our lives.
And I don't think that you mentioned that you actually are gluten intolerant totally, right? That you do have celiac disease is what you figured out, right? And and then that there's a big healing process when you are celiac and you're not realizing it, that there's kind of a lot of inflammation and tissue damage, and it can take a year or two sometimes to really recover from that.
Yeah, it can take more. So yeah, I did find out that I was gluten intolerant, that I had celiac disease. I was the first one in my family to figure it out. And later on, a couple years later, other members of my family figured it out as well. And, you know, it does run in families. So if your family member has it, you definitely want to get checked out or just eliminate gluten and see how you feel. So yeah, I did find out that that was the culprit. That was what was causing my inflammation and my hives that I got once in a while. And there was a huge, you know, mess going on inside of me. And so that's really what was healing when I went on the raw food diet. But even after eliminating gluten, I would still get flare-ups once in a while just out of nowhere because of all of the, you know, stuff stays in you for a long time if you're like that. So you can have, not to get gross, but you can have, you know, remains of meals you've eaten in you years after you've eaten them if you don't really take care of flushing out that system.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I do not have quite the dramatic story like that, but it's so fascinating how you had to figure it out, because even now the gluten issue has really come to light in the last maybe 5 years. And before that, people didn't talk about it the way they do now. And I know some people think it's this trend, another fad diet, but if you've read the Wheat Belly book, I happen to have read that one, he goes into pretty technical explanation of how the wheat that we eat today is not the same wheat from hundreds of years ago or even 50 years ago.
Yeah.
And why, you know, people are so sensitive, or why children are so sensitive. So there is an explanation beyond, oh, it's trendy to eat gluten-free. It's like, no, it's not really a trend, people. It's a serious issue in our food source today.
Yeah, it's the industrialization of the food system, right? We've hybridized our crop to be incompatible with the human body. I think we went a little too far there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I read an interesting article recently, too, about food and organic food. And it just brought something to light where they said, you know, eating organic absolutely is much better for you. And, you know, avoiding pesticides and all that stuff. But the article talked about the fact that even with organic farming, they're farming on large plots of land, and they're using machinery to, you know, pick the food and process the food and so forth to at least, you know, bring it into the facilities. And how the true old-fashioned farmer, where, you know, somebody was handling your food kind of one-on-one, how that is even important, that we're, you know, sharing the love, like when the farmer loves what they're doing and they're putting love into everything that they're farming and picking and stuff. And I just never thought about that before, that our food isn't handled like it used to be. It's all machines.
Yeah, that's really true. There's a huge movement of small farming now, but very few people see that food. You really have to make a conscious effort to go and be a part of that. And a lot of CSAs will offer that, a community-supported agriculture, where you pay the farm a fee before the season starts, and that's how they pretty much finance the whole season of growing, and they give you a portion of everything that they grow. That's a really great thing to do. And if you're in a city like me, we've talked about what I do, the Nature's Garden Delivered, where they pick up local crops from surrounding farms and give me a box every week. But there's a book called The Secret Life of Plants, and there's also many other studies that show what happens to plants as they're growing if you talk to them and love them, or if you just ignore them, or if you send hateful words to them. And it does show over and over and over again that it really does matter how, you know, what environment those plants grow up in and if they're given love or not. So that makes total sense to me.
Yeah, yeah. It is interesting. Well, it's hard. You know, here in Connecticut, it's, 25 degrees, and planting a garden is a long ways off. But we do have CSAs out here. And I know my family, we do have a small garden that we grow every year, and it's really fun. But it's a lot of work, too. It takes a lot of patience to grow things yourself. So, yeah.
It does, yeah.
Well, in my journey, my spiritual awakening over the last 5 years or so, just slowly changing what I eat just became like normal to me, and I just felt called to do it, and I wasn't even expecting to do it. And one of the things actually I did adjust in the family, I talked to, I have a teenage daughter and my husband, and I said, I think we should try doing gluten-free for a while, or at least less gluten. And one reason why I wanted to do that is my husband's mother has celiac disease, and it took her a number of years to figure that out, and she got quite ill, and she's doing great now. But I kind of kept in the back of my mind, like, well, if she has it, maybe my husband, could have it or have a tendency towards that. So for the last 2 years, I would say we're 75 to 90% gluten-free. None of us have true celiac, so we can tolerate it if we decide to cheat a little bit. But we all had good results from it. And I think one of the things that happened for me, which I wasn't expecting, is sinus conditions just improved. I didn't have a lot of allergies, and I was never overly stuffy, but when I would go to the gym, and particularly when I would do a spinning class where you're kind of sweating a lot and you're leaning over your bike, I remember, gosh, I always had to have like a tissue with me, and my nose was always running a little bit, and I thought there's something in this room maybe I'm allergic to. But it was when I gave up eating gluten that 6-8 months later, I kind of realized, gee, I don't have that issue anymore. And so I would say it was a diet change. So I love the idea of making these adjustments, letting them settle, and then see how you feel, and both energetically and physical symptoms, and see if some of those improve. Because I think a lot of sinus issues and ears and all that could be attributed to something that we're eating.
Yeah. Well, if you don't tolerate something well, your body needs to get rid of it really fast. So think about throwing up. Like if you drink too much alcohol, your body does what it, the quickest thing it can to get rid of that, which is eject it. It's gross to think about, but that's just your body looking out for you, because otherwise you would die, possibly if it kept it in your system and it had to process it through your bloodstream. But the body has other ways of getting rid of things, like producing mucus, so that will escort that substance out of your body, or creating pimples so that it can push the toxin out through your skin, which is your largest organ. And, regular ways, too, that we all are familiar with every day.
Right.
But if you're eating something that your body doesn't like or sees as a toxin, like dairy or grains, then it'll produce mucus, and what does that end up in? Your nose, your sinuses, your ears. I'm sure we've all had the experience of having mucus come out the regular way too, and it's gross. So you can kind of tell just by looking at your symptoms if you're eating something that's not agreeing with you. Like, do you have a lot of pimples on your face? Are you having to blow your nose every morning all the time? How's your poop looking? That can tell you a lot, and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the mucus thing and the inflammation from an allergy, too, I mean, definitely think with that mucus, you end up with more potential for, like, sinus infections and ear infections, which I don't get as much anymore at all. And I think there's just less likelihood that a bacteria can sort of set up shop because it's not all full of just kind of stuff up there. The other thing I would say is for us, we really cut back on dairy, in particular milk. We still do eat cheese. We like cheese. I don't eat a ton of it. I, as a baby, was lactose intolerant. And then as a young kid, I was okay with milk. And then the lactose intolerance really kicked up in college. Now I'm pretty good, but I avoid milk unless it's like the lactate type milk. But I think around the time we gave up gluten, we also gave up regular milk, and we do almond milk now. And that's one big regret I think I have with having my daughter, because she's 17 now, is I really wish I'd never put her on cow's milk, because it is full of normal hormones that the cow produces, because it's feeding this little animal that's supposed to gain like 400 pounds in a year. And you know, we're putting that into our bodies. And so I think that we've had good luck with less sinus issues and all that by doing, you know, less milk. Do you drink regular milk, Rachel, or what's your theory on milk?
No, I've never drink milk. I've been lactose intolerant my whole life. And I can tolerate raw cheese because the lactose in it isn't like transformed because of the pasteurization, but I don't even eat that very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But I agree on the milk thing. Milk produces more mucus in our system than anything else. Like, we can produce pounds of it, which is disgusting to think about. Besides, I don't know if you want me to. I mean, I have a really strong opinion about milk.
I think
you should eat or drink whatever you want to drink, but just the production of milk is gross. Like, they're allowed to put so many pounds of pus into the milk along with the milk because there's no other way to do it. You can't separate that with the machines that they use. And so even if you're getting the non-hormone added milk, you know, like Megan said, there's already hormones in it from the cows, but you're also getting blood and pus and all sorts of disgusting things. So I'm not really a milk fan. I drink almond milk or hemp milk if I need milk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've really come to really like the almond milk. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And making your own is really easy, too.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I haven't gotten that ambitious yet, so...
Yeah, so I know we were supposed to talk more about vibration today, but I think what we're figuring out here as we speak is, like, how you feel and what you put in your body really does have a huge part in creating your vibration. So we eat stuff because we're made of that ingredients. Like, we're made of the ingredients that we eat. And I think we often lose that connection. Like, the cells in our body are created because of the raw ingredients that we put in our body. So we've gotten so far away from that notion. I don't know if that's ever said as we're growing up, even in science class. And I don't remember a class about that. And I loved science growing up. So all of these things, like, a cow is supposed to make milk for its baby, like you said, because that baby is made out of that milk. All the ingredients in that milk are produced specifically to turn that baby cow into a big cow. And, you know, we're going to have clues from our intuition about what to put in our bodies so that we become the version of ourselves that we desire. And like Megan's journey, she was guided to reduce the gluten in her just naturally. Like, it didn't come from research beforehand. She wasn't looking to change anything. It was kind of delivered to her in her intuition, and that's what she did. And she felt better. So I really like that. You know, this doesn't have to be something that we go away for and study nutrition, and then we come up with a plan, and then we start doing the plan. It can be natural if we're just open to receiving whatever guidance comes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just feel like as I've gotten a little bit more educated, too, and not, I haven't gone out and read a ton of books, but I've read a little bit here and there that just making more careful choices at the grocery store and trying different things and just seeing how we like it. How do we like the taste? I think that when you really, really don't like a food, it's not meant for you. I just, there's a reason you're averse to it. There's a reason that smell or that flavor is not good. I do think that children can learn to, you know, eat more vegetables versus just, well, all I'll eat is chicken nuggets and you throw your hands up in the air. I think it does take some time to cultivate with kids. But as adults, I think that key to me is when I don't like something, I don't really judge that. I just say it's not for me. And I've also always been very focused on eating intuitively. What am I craving? Do I want chicken tonight? Am I in the mood for like a vegetarian meal? Am I really in the mood for like a crunchy salad? And I've been doing that for years and years and years, not realizing in the end that I was just listening to what my body wanted. And fortunately, it didn't ask me for Big Macs all the time. But I do like to cook basically from scratch. And my husband has diabetes, so you know, eating a bunch of processed foods is not really an option. But I think if more people kind of paid attention to that, you know, what are you really craving? That's a great way to let your higher self kind of guide what you eat.
Yeah. That's such a great example. And I think that when we're young, like for me, and I love my mom, she's amazing, but I grew up on canned vegetables and I didn't like them. You know, I loved eating my carrots from the bag and I loved salads when we went out for them, but we didn't have much salad in the house and the vegetables that we did eat were kind of soggy and disgusting and they had sodium in them and I didn't like them. And so it took me a very long time to realize that I loved vegetables and I had to be out of the house before that happened and really buy my own food. And, you know, the nanny job I was talking about in the beginning of the show, they really opened my eyes because they steamed kale and they, you know, ate lots and lots of fresh vegetables. So I had to really experience that for myself before I realized, like, this food can taste good. This is really amazing. Like, all these different fruits, like mangoes. And, you know, I'd never had a mango or a kiwi until I was an adult. And holy cow, they are pretty awesome.
They are.
You know, feeding our kids like, you know, canned and jarred baby food, maybe they don't like certain flavors, but you have to ask yourself, how was that prepared? Would you like to eat that? You know, would that tantalize your taste buds if you were to eat that now? And, you know, there's a big difference between a canned green bean and a fresh green bean. In terms of taste and nutritional value.
That's true, but I'll tell you what, to this day, if someone handed me a little baby jar of blueberry buckle, which I think Gerber made, oh my gosh, was that delicious. Of course, it's probably more like candy than nutrition.
Yeah.
But I always hope my daughter wouldn't finish that. You mentioned baby food. But anyway, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I was not that mom, you know, 17 years ago, and I did use baby food. But we, as soon as, you know, my daughter was old enough to start eating real food, regular food, and join us with what we're eating, you know, we really did that. We did let her have, she had her little times with the chicken nuggets and the French fries here and there, and it was easier as young parents to do that. But by the time she was four or so, we literally burned out a toaster oven making some chicken nuggets and French fries. And we said, well, that's it. You're eating what we're eating now. And to this day, she's an excellent eater. when we go on trips when she was younger, my parents took us on a cruise, and she ordered off the menu like a pro and ordered vegetables, ordered salads, all of that. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's just, just giving kids and even adults the opportunity to try different things and mm-hmm. seek out like what it is that feels good to them.
Yeah.
I know recently I read, last year I read The Blood Type Diet, which I know is a little controversial, and some people say that it's not valid and all, and other people are real proponents, and I really resonated with that book, and I'm a type O blood type, and I have always needed more protein than maybe the average person. I don't feel well eating vegetarian type diet. You know, I eat 2 days of all veggies and beans, and I'm ready to climb a wall. And we were talking a little bit earlier before the show about the paleo diet too, and how that's gained some momentum in looking back at how your ancestors ate, and that, you know, a lot of us had ancestors that hunted and ate meat, and that there's really not anything wrong with that. It may be that that's what satiates your body. I think, and what I've learned is there's just no one answer for everybody. You know, it's the blood type thing, you know, like for me, following a lot of that really works well, yet there are certain foods in there that I do eat and others that I don't eat. It's personal, but I think that paleo or blood type diet, those all provide a little extra info that may or may not resonate.
Yeah, so Donna Gates, who is the founder of the Body Ecology Diet, she is really important because she brought stevia to this country. And her whole body of work is all about candida. And I know we're going to talk about candida in a sec, but I wanted to bring her up because she's a really big proponent of the blood type diet with just a few little tweaks that she's thrown in there. Mm-hmm. And so she's helped millions of people overcome candida. And one of her biggest tools for that is cultured vegetables, but again, we'll talk about in a second. So she is really big into the blood type diet. And also Daniel Vitalis, who is somebody who's huge in like the wild community. He's very into what our ancestors did, how they lived, how they survived, and how they thrived in the wild. But he brought up a really good point, and it's that our ancestors, through the data, through what we've learned with archaeology and everything, were not eating a raw diet. They were eating the paleo diet. They were cooking their meat. They were cooking their vegetables. And that's really the proven thing. Like, that's how they survived. If you figure, if they were eating the wrong things, we would not exist. We just wouldn't be here because they would have died off from starvation or weakness or whatever. And so he's finding that a lot of people who don't do well on the raw diet or on, you know, vegetarian diets switch over to a more natural kind of cooked food with meat diet, and they're really thriving and adding muscle and, you know, not having a lot of the symptoms that people like Megan have when they try to go without meat. So I agree. I don't think there's one diet for everybody. I think the raw diet is a very healing diet in that you're allowing maximum energy for your body to like heal other things. Like I said, digestion really does take up most of our energy. And so when you're diverting that to other things, then you can really overcome a lot of scar tissue in your body and other damage. But at some point, and it'll be different for everybody, you may need to go back to a different type of diet to really move on with your life and rebuild. So that's kind of what I've learned over my many years of study, and I've also seen a lot of people in the raw food movement go back to cooked foods after a long time. You know, 10 years is pretty much the average where I've been following people, and then all of a sudden they say that they're not eating raw anymore. So I think a good balance is really where what we're looking for, whatever makes you feel good. You know, like I don't eat meat, but I eat, you know, probably 80 to 90% raw, and I don't have any rules, so if I want to eat something, then I'd eat it. And mm-hmm. that seems to work best for me. I once in a while I'll eat a little fish, but I don't normally like it. When I eat it, I'm like, oh, I think I want that, but then I don't. I'm like, oh, it's kind of heavy. So I'm like on the opposite spectrum of Megan, but
right.
I think.
No surprise.
Yeah, but whatever works for you, and it can change over the years. I think the bad part is like getting caught in some identity. Like what you eat is not your identity. It's just what you're putting in your body. So vegetarian, vegan, raw, paleo, whatever. Just eat what makes you feel good.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to talk a little bit? You mentioned candida, which some people might not know that term.
Yeah.
A little bit more layman, like yeast is a form of candida, I think. I mean, I think there's a lot out there, but candida can be a real issue for people, especially women. And if ever you've been on antibiotics for a little bit long term, there's a lot of people on the East Coast that deal with Lyme disease and end up on antibiotics long term, and they end up with candida, which is like a yeast of a fungal infection that kind of takes over in your body, and the symptoms can mimic other illnesses. Which makes it hard to detect, and doctors don't necessarily think to look for candida. They're looking for more of a bacteria or, you know, a typical infection, and yet it can be really quite miserable.
Yeah, so we all have, you know, if you think about our gut bacteria, we all have gut bacteria, and it's a balance of helpful and harmful. And if we stay off of antibiotics and we take our probiotics, then we'll have a better ratio, right? Like we'll have more good bacteria and less bad bacteria. But when things go off and we have antibiotics, which kills it all or most of it, you know, like antibiotics, you know, we're killing our good bacteria. That strain of it, you know, the candida, gets overgrown. If you've ever seen a pond with, you know, an overgrowth of, you know, pond scum or something, it turns green and things are out of whack. And so it can happen in our body, but it doesn't stay there. Like it can spread throughout our organs. It can spread, you know, to our vagina. You can have a yeast infection. It gets into your bloodstream, and you can actually smell a lot of times when you have a candida overgrowth. And here's a really good marker that I think a lot of people might resonate with. If you have a candida overgrowth and you have gas, it'll smell kind of sweet. It's like, it's not a normal, like, foul-smelling, you know, I just farted kind of smell. It's like, it's almost a sweet smell, and that's the kind of odor. You'll kind of, like, be off-gassing that all the time, even if you don't pass it. And there are a lot of other symptoms, like Megan said. You'll often feel foggy-headed, like you won't be able to concentrate. You'll be confused. You'll be really tired. You'll often have headaches. Sometimes you will have inflammation. And a lot of times, you'll just have this general puffiness to your body, like you're retaining fluid. We could probably go on and on, but... those are just some of the ways that you can tell if you have that.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about what you experienced?
Well, in this household, both myself and my daughter both dealt with Lyme disease for a number of years. And I treated with antibiotics and pretty quickly tipped the scales into having like the yeast candida overgrowth, and it really just made me so uncomfortable, and intestinally things were just all messed up and shut down, and I finally just stopped the antibiotics. Like I couldn't do it, and I think I had done it enough to where I got a leg up on the Lyme disease, and I just let my immune system take it from there, and I was able to get over it. But it isn't until recently where I did a program in the fall to lose a few pounds and worked with a coach and learned a bit more about nutrition and supplements and so forth, like that I finally feel like the candida is totally in check. And so this took years, like 8 years, to really get back in balance. And And now I feel like, yes, if I do have a little bit of sugar, it doesn't automatically lead to some yeast problem or white on the tongue or something like that. And my daughter had quite the battle with Lyme disease as well. And we were throwing antibiotics at it, and we were seeing this Lyme specialist. And we finally realized, actually through the help of Rachel as well, intuitively, when I was talking about my daughter's condition, she said, well, what about candida? And it just felt right. And when you look up the symptoms of a candida overgrowth, and we're talking more systemic, not just an isolated, oh, you have a thrush in your throat, but more of a systemic yeast that really can get in your whole body, the symptoms can really be similar to Lyme disease. And the headaches and the fogginess and anxiety was a big issue, some tingling and numbness and all that. And so we finally realized we kept throwing antibiotics at a yeast infection, which of course is the opposite of what you want to do. And so we stopped the antibiotics altogether. We had to go on a very, very low sugar, just no added sugar diet, because yeast feeds on sugar. I mean, that's how they even ferment wine and all that. It's yeast and some sugar feeds the yeast. And slowly but surely, and then additional supplements, probiotics, and other herbal type supplements, we got her body chemistry back to normal. But it took a long time and a lot of patience. And you question, are we doing the right thing? Are we sure this isn't still Lyme? But I couldn't believe how similar the symptoms were. And so going more gluten-free, a lot less dairy, not much sugar, and not a lot of processed foods, you know, trying to avoid the chips and things. Yeah, it took a while to get back in balance, but I was just talking to my daughter the other day, and she said, no, I can eat fruit now, and it doesn't throw me back into candida, because unfortunately, even healthy sugars can feed a yeast infection. So,
yeah,
long haul, but learned a lot about nutrition along the way, which is partially why, you know, we both did in our journeys and why we wanted to have our show today, just to share that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know about you, but the hardest part about the candida overgrowth for me was the emotional side of it. Like, go back to when I was 18 or so, you know, even after that, because I was so out of whack my whole life, and because I was overeating on pasta and bread because that was the only thing that gave me energy, I had a severe candida overgrowth, and I was crying all the time. I was always emotional. Things were always setting me off, and I couldn't get a handle on how I was feeling, and I would just cry and not know why, and it was really hugely affecting me in my life, especially my poor husband at the time. You know, it must have been awful to live with me, because I was just like a time bomb. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, the sugar and the candida can really make you unpredictable. It can take over your entire body, including your emotions. And that's just, it's so hard to watch that happen. It's so hard to live with too. So if you are feeling like that, then definitely think about candida.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And the other thing that I learned more about recently, and I know you know quite a bit about it, is alkalinity of our body, basically the pH of our body, and that in the end, kind of no matter how you choose to eat and what diet and foods feel right to you, it's keeping your pH in balance that is a huge contributor to being healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about our fun story too. Megan and I went to New York last year, and we decided to go to this health food store that I had been visiting online for years called High Vibe. And they had a home pH testing kit where you could just buy the little pH strips and stick it on your tongue and then see how your pH is. So if you're acidic or you're alkaline. And we did that on the train ride home, and we were both a little bit different. And the pH is basically like, if your pH is off in the wrong direction, a lot of things are going to happen. You're going to be inflamed. Your body's not going to be able to have its optimal you know, immune response, it's basically going to be trying to make itself right. And so if you're acidic, it's going to be, your body is going to be taking minerals out of your bones and putting it into your blood so that it's counteracting your acidity and making you the right pH. So a lot of stuff can go wrong. And I think every single cancer patient they've ever tested has been acidic. So if you keep your pH correct, which is basically like, I don't know what a good analogy would be for this. I can't really think of anything. But your body has to be a certain way or it will try to be a certain way. So if you're not giving your body like the pH that it needs, if you're not doing the right things and putting in the right things to keep your pH correct, your body will overcompensate and take things away from your bones and all that to try to counteract it. So your body's going to be trying to work really hard. And
kinda
it's
like
also going
seesaw.
To be... Yeah, and it's going to be, you know, degrading yourself, it's cannibalizing yourself in order to keep that correct, which is not good. We don't want osteoporosis just because we weren't alkaline enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's not really a good thing.
So I suppose people can probably just go on Amazon and look for those pH tester things that we got at that store because it may or may not be easy to find. It's probably an average grocery store doesn't have them, huh?
I don't think so, no. I mean, maybe a health food store.
Yeah, they may.
But luckily, you know, changing your pH is really simple. You know, green things and fruit make your pH go more alkaline. Processed foods, fried foods, fatty foods, animal protein, you know, soft drinks makes your pH go more acid. So just have more alkaline things than acid things and you'll be good.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And no stress. Stress will make you go acidic as well.
And then the one other thing I just wanted to talk about, because this was something I hadn't really heard of until probably even last year, but that's a shame on me. But as far as foods we eat and organic produce and stuff, if you don't have a giant farm yourself, you're not... you know, kissing every vegetable that you're pulling out of the ground. I know that they have a list and it gets updated every so often called the Dirty Dozen. And I think it's just different foods. Like, you know, it's really can be expensive, kind of cost prohibitive to eat organic all the time. But there's this dozen list of foods that if you can, you should eat organically. And I guess it's because they're what, just more vulnerable to pesticides and just the negative aspects of farming. If you don't get it organic, it's not as good for you.
What do you mean? Like the foods like, that are on the Dirty Dozen?
Yeah. Are they just more susceptible to pesticides?
Yeah, they're more sprayed. Yeah, like some things are just, they're given more chemicals than others. You know, some things have to be sprayed more to keep the bugs away than other things. Yeah.
So
you want to read that?
Yeah, I found a list. So, and it was 12 items. Peaches, apples, bell pepper, celery, nectarines, strawberries, cherries, kale, pears, carrots, grapes, and lettuce. Those were the list that I found, which is a lot. It's a lot of stuff.
It is a lot, you know, and especially there's such a kale revolution going on. It would be a shame for people to just go and buy conventional kale because that's on the Dirty Dozen.
Right.
But pesticides are a big deal. A lot of people downplay it, but what happens with a lot of these chemicals that we ingest is that they get stored in our fat cells. So it's not like we're just bringing them in and then flushing them out with our pee. You know, they're actually sticking around our bodies. And people who get tested for these chemicals, they'll find chemicals that they had 20 years ago in their system. And it's just scary because then that becomes part of us. Our hormones adjust to that. So many chain reactions happen because of what we put in our body. And I don't want this to sound like, you know, scary. It's just be aware of what you're putting in your body and know that there are other options. I have to tell you that being able to afford those organic red bell peppers is a big part of why I make my own money. You know, organic red bell peppers are freaking expensive. They're like $6 a pound sometimes. And I remember the day when I could afford them and I didn't have to worry about, like, you know, buying too much or spending that much on things. And that's a huge part of why I have my own business and why I make money, because I don't want to have to compromise that anymore.
So, yeah, it is an expense, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah. And just think of, if it seems extravagant to you, like, what did our great-grandparents eat? Everything was organic. Like, the whole pesticide movement and the artificial fertilizer movement, that was a choice that this country made after the war because we had too many chemicals left over and we had to figure out what to do with them. So, you know, they growing up, all those people who made that decision for us, they ate organic food. Organic food is the natural state of being. You know, Mother Nature doesn't make artificial chemical pesticides. So it's not as weird or frou-frou as people make it out to be. You know, it's like if you want to eat organic, you're kind of made out to be this health nut instead of someone who just wants what has always been available to us, you know. So don't think of yourself as being high maintenance if you want organic food. It's really just your own awareness of what would be better for your body and your vibration.
Yeah. So I wonder if, you know, keeping like a food journal for a week would be an interesting thing to do, where you kind of track like how am I feeling at breakfast time and lunchtime and dinner time, and then correlate if something maybe at breakfast, oh, I felt sluggish at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And maybe if that happens 3 days in a row and you ate a bagel every day, it tells you something. Or I don't know. What do you think, Rachel, for trying to figure out, like, how do we put two and two together sometimes? Because it can be tricky to figure out what we're sensitive to or what foods are contributing to a higher vibration, because it's not necessarily an instant result. Like, you know, going gluten-free in our family, it took a number of months before I noticed any big changes.
Well, I mean, there's such a thing called an elimination diet, and that's where you cut out all of those things that you think are causing you problems, you know, for a month or two. So no dairy, no gluten, no sugar, whatever you want to test, you want to eliminate it for at least a month or two. And then one by one, you reintroduce it. So then you'd go and eat a bagel and see, how does this make me feel? Because as Megan was saying to me earlier, when you do eliminate that stuff and then you eat it again, you're a lot more sensitive to it. So if you eliminate it and then reintroduce it one by one, then you can really get a feel for what it does to you. And then over the long run, like you're saying, you didn't put together the sinus effect right away. And with this example, if you were just to not eat gluten for 2 months and then bring it back, you wouldn't necessarily see that your sinuses were cleared. But go with your intuition as well. You know, if you want to, if you're thinking to yourself and feeling in your body, okay, I don't like that I'm sniffling all the time, or I don't like that I need so many tissues when I exercise, have a little dialogue with your body and ask, you know, is it the gluten? Is it the sugar? Is it, you know, that I have too much dust in my house and I need to change my air filter? Ask yourself questions and then see where you get a resonance. We're very smart. You know, we're all connected, our bodies, our spirituality, our, you know, everything. So you have all the answers that you need within you.
Just a matter of tuning in a little more, huh? A little fine-tuning.
Yeah.
Listening.
One other thing I just wanted to mention, though, was, like, over the years, so many people – did I already say this? Not really. So people come up to me and they say that – I said part of it. I didn't say the rest of it. You know, they say that they're sensitive and that they can't eat anything. And I mentioned that, you know, you have nature, you have fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and so forth. But instead of feeling like that's a victim thing, like, oh, I can't eat anything, what am I going to do? and I've been there, so I'm not preaching, but instead try to look at it as a tool. Your higher self, you know, your God, whatever you believe in, is giving you this restriction because it's going to help you. It's going to help you be more focused. It's going to help you do whatever it is you signed up to do here. And it's, you know, there are so many reasons why it could help you. Maybe you need a stronger body. Maybe you need less artificial things in your body to get things done. You know, our bodies, aside from bringing us from place to place and allowing us to enjoy certain physical things, they're also huge power generators and receivers. And the more artificial stuff we have clogging us up, the less powerful we are at, you know, transmitting and receiving that energy. And so from a spiritual point of view, you're going to be less psychic if you have all that crap in you, and you won't be able to really communicate spiritually on the level that maybe you wanted to. So this is all guided. This is all divine. You set all of this up. You know, you would not have come into a life with dietary restrictions that if you didn't want them there. You put them there in the first place. So just take ownership of it. Do the best you can. Find foods that you absolutely love and just eat them. It's pretty cool. Buy a case of bananas if you want. Don't care about what other people say. I've done that. I eat a ton of fruit, and I've gone to dinner parties with my boyfriend, and I've just, you know, packed a couple of bananas in my bag and eat them at the table. Like, it, you don't have to feel afraid about sticking out in a crowd. It's really quite okay.
And it may bring up for interesting dinner conversation.
It always does.
Yeah.
But normally people are like, oh, look at you. You're smart, you know. So
yeah.
It's not like I get ridiculed everywhere either. It's, you know, it's a funny thing. People are pretty open, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who aren't, whatever, they probably aren't feeling very good at the moment themselves.
Right. Right. Oh. Wow. Well, great conversation, Rachel. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much. We could get into such specifics, and maybe we'll do a show every month or two about foods, or maybe a specific you know, food, like we could talk about raw chocolate, or we could talk about fermented foods, or, you know, oils and cold pressed oils and olive oils and the good and the bad, because there's so much to it.
Yeah, I would love to have a whole show on blood sugar and candida and raw foods, because those things are all really related, especially for people new getting into that. And yeah, I can think of a couple people I'd love to have on too, which, you know, who could explain this better than me, like Daniel Vitalis or Donna Gates. That would be great. So yeah, if you're listening, definitely let us know what you want to hear about regarding food or anything else. We welcome your input, and we'd love to bring you a show that you want to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, that, yeah, blood sugar, candida, all that is so me. So, I had so many issues with blood sugar, and once I got the candida under control and realized that protein and more balanced eating, yeah, that all came to just kind of dissolve the blood sugar issues. And it's, oh, life is much more comfortable when you don't have those lows.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's definitely.
And for
do
the people
show.
Around you too, right? If
you're
not getting grumpy all the time. I remember I used to travel with Eric when I still had some blood sugar issues, and he would know when I would like switch, you know, that flip would go off, and I'd like need food.
Yeah.
He'd go find something for me. But often, you know, when you're eating this way, there isn't something around the corner. You know, you have to really prepare and bring your own food everywhere. So, anyway. Great conversation. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
This is totally up my alley. And
yeah,
I will have all of these links, everything that we mentioned on the blog tomorrow, or if you're listening after this is already aired, then just go to soulfulpreneur.com and go to blog, and you'll see everything that we've mentioned listed out so that you can update yourself and click on the links that really resonate for you. And thank you for visiting. We love our website, and we have lots of information there for you. Yeah. So thanks, Megan.
Great. Well, thank you, Rachel. Thanks for all your knowledge. I always know whenever I have a little food question, I ask Rachel, and she's always got some research and examples to offer up. And you were a big help in us figuring out that Lyme was not the issue Candida was with my daughter. So I'm always grateful for that. Learned a lot.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I'm glad. I love Mallory.
So, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're part of the Enlightenment Evolution Network, and it's a network for all things metaphysical, and we have radio shows on throughout the week, and they're on at all different times and days of the week. And so we will play a soundtrack here that will let you know what shows are coming up. And Rachel and I will be back live next week. Very good. Thanks. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Karen Newman from the show About Oneness, and here's what's coming up on the week starting on Monday, January the 12th, until Sunday, January the 18th, on the Enlightenment Evolution Network 1 and 2. Simply put, Rob Gauthier, founder of the EEN and the host of the show that started it all, the Enlightenment Evolution Hour, has put together the greatest metaphysical radio network ever. 7 days a week, we have shows that will aid you on your path to enlightenment, evolution, and ascension. On EEN 1, on Mondays, 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is Heart to Heart Talk Radio with your host, Daniel Scranton. Join Daniel and his featured guests discussing a wide variety of metaphysical topics. Daniel channels the creators, the Hathors, Ophelia the Fairy, Archangel Michael, and the latest, the Unicorn Collective. Daniel and his guests will take phone calls and questions, and it's sure to generate high-frequency discussions. You can find more about Daniel at his website, danielscranton.com, and also on Facebook. Go to the Events tab on Daniel's website to learn more about Daniel's upcoming events. On Monday, Daniel's guest will be the channeler Serge Granbois. Serge is a channeler who's been working with an entity by the name of Chris for many years. They will discuss Serge's journey as a channel and as a human being, and he will be channeling Chris, taking your calls and questions. On Tuesday, noon Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, please join hosts Megan Crandallmeyer and Rachel Archelaus for radio, inspiration, expression, and abundance for their show, Soulfulpreneur. Spiritual business specialists Rachel and Megan will bring you inspiring conversations with people who are living their soul purpose. Frequent guests include psychic mediums, channelers, coaches, artists, and authors. They will end every show with psychic reading and business coaching. Your questions about your spiritual business or life purpose are welcome. Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, is the show that started it all, the Enlightenment Evolution Hour with host Rob Gauthier. Rob channels Trev on the first Wednesday of each month and will take callers' questions. On the third Wednesday, he will have special guests such as guest channelers and other metaphysical teachers. The other two Wednesdays are freestyle call-in shows to discuss whatever callers have on their minds. Tune in to Rob on Wednesday nights, and you can also find him at TrebChanneling.com and also on Facebook at the Enlightenment Evolution Network group page. Rob has a few special announcements. Every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, TrebChanneling.com hosts an hour-long meditation class. Please go to TrebChanneling.com to register. From April 3rd to April 5th, 2015, you can spend 3 days with Treb and Ardif in Asheville, North Carolina during the lunar eclipse. This is a 3-day workshop on channeling. Only 30 spots are available. And on September 19th, Treb Channeling presents the Channel Panel, Awakening from Within. Channelers include Lee Harris, Sean Swanson, Daniel Scranton, Nora Harold, Wendy Kennedy, Brad Johnson, Sean Randall, and Rob Gauthier. This incredible live event is available in person and also on live stream. The cost of admission is $120 per day or $200 for both days, and on live stream, $50 per day or $100 for both. Go to TrebChanneling.com to purchase it. Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, join host Philip Malika with the Consciousness Evolution Hour. Join Philip and his special guests and co-hosts as they discuss the shift, ascension, timelines, metaphysical concepts, and the fifth dimension. Find Philip at the Consciousness Evolution 2.0 group on Facebook and also on YouTube. Fridays, The Earth Experience with Kalina Angel, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The Earth Experience explores our soul's expansion through our human experiences on Earth. Kalina will help you navigate and expand through the exciting confusions that we are manifesting as new 5D beings. Saturdays, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Victoria Vives Kyung hosting Earth Sky People Radio, living in harmony with Mother Earth and awakening to an intergalactic society, bringing to you greater awareness regarding star seeds and extraterrestrial life, living in harmony with one another, with Mother Earth and with life beyond the Earth, the transformative power of music, frequency, and sound, shamanism, ancestral wisdom, and star nations, intentional communities, self-sustainable and regenerative living, the interstellar alliance on planet Earth, and becoming part of an intergalactic society, and much, much more. See all the details at victoriavives.com/radio. On Saturday, January 17th at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Earth Sky People with your host, Victoria Vives Kyung, will be offering a health intensive sharing about the top 5 health secrets nobody talks about. And co-hosting with Victoria will be her husband, Nian Kyung. He is the co-founder of Earth Sky People and has worked professionally in the health, fitness, and medical industries for 15 years, including running a private practice in acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine. Make sure to submit your questions for this upcoming health show at victoriavives.com/contact. Also, if you're in the Los Angeles area, you can join the 1-year Energy Healer Apprenticeship and the Crystal Healer Course for a life-changing experience. Just go to ReikiWellbeing.org. Space is limited. On Sundays, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, is my show, About Oneness. About Oneness is a weekly radio program focused on celebrating the ongoing conscious awakening of our planet and our realization of oneness. The show for me is about integrating all of my experiences and following my highest excitement, which is tapping into the truth of the universe. If you would like to learn more about me, my upcoming guests, as well as see many videos of channelings and teachings, you can go to aboutoneness.com. My guest on Sunday, January the 18th, is medium Crystal Vandenacker from the Netherlands. Crystal is a medium, channel, and Reiki master and one of my dearest friends. The topic of the show will be letting go and letting it flow. On EEN Network 2, on Saturday evenings, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, the Pied Piper and Texas Rebel hosting the show, Disclosure Now. Disclosure Now is the On the Edge of Our Seats show that covers all topics of disclosure, from the world's most famous and obscure UFO cases to cryptozoology, conspiracy, and all things that go bump in the night. Pied Piper started his journey in Michigan in 1993 as a preteen seeing Bigfoot and never could get enough in investigating all things paranormal. Texas Rebel was a wild Texas man who loves the same journey and has studied these same things for years. Join them as they cover all things in the human experience that just cannot be answered by anyone. And remember, you never have to miss any show on the Enlightenment Evolution Network 1 or 2. All shows are available to listen to immediately after they air on playback. Or you can go to the Enlightenment Evolution Network YouTube page and see all shows after they air. All right, back to the show.